The Queerkening.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jim.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Kyle.
And this is the Concept Crucible Podcast. And today's topic is our return to the subject. It turns out that you can't just talk about queerness in an hour, in one podcast. It turns out
in another country, on another landmass.
Yeah, it turns out that it's a rich subject that deserves more attention. Mm-hmm. And for that, we have brought in another guest, Kyle, who is waving for those of you on the audio version.
Hello.
And our icebreaker for today, because Kyle is an island and partakes of no queer media and has no idols, we decided to go with a simple one. Which is where do you sit? Like, where do you identify your sexuality? And Ryan, you are a token straight guy.
I am.
So if you weren't here for the last podcast, actually we'll talk about that after our icebreaker.
Okay.
So you get to go first, Ryan, as the token.
So, as the token guy, if I assume a 0 to 6 Kinsey scale where 0 is complete heterosexual, I guess.
To this Kinsey scale, yep. And probably one article being like, here's some of the problems with the Kinsey scale in the show notes.
And 6 being complete homosexual, I guess I would identify as a 1. I don't think... I've never participated in anything other than heterosexual
acts, I've been told that this podcast is kind of gay.
I guess maybe, but I'm not completely averse to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say I would leave open the possibility. In the pre-show, I kind of talked about it in an empiricism point of view. I accept that even though the sun has always risen, there will be a day when the sun doesn't rise. There will be a day when all emeralds are now grew past a certain point, and I may not be a 0 heterosexual. So I don't know. That's where I would probably place myself on
a
scale.
While we await the precious day when Huck finally seeks out man love.
Yeah.
Kyle.
Cisgender, gay person. Using the Kinsey scale, it'd be a 6. Mm. Neither super feminine nor super masculine. If you wanted to put me on a scale for that kind of thing, just nerdy.
So I am pansexual. I'm also cis. I don't know.
2.
What are you doing?
I'm throwing you on multiple axes.
Oh my god!
Because you can't be just in one dimension, Jim. You got to be 2, and then eventually 3.
This is complicated.
It is. It's geometry. Homosexual geometry.
Oh. That actually sounds really fun. There's a story in that. No, I don't know too much about the Kinsey scale. I've never taken the test, but wherever pansexuality fits in on that, that seems to be where I belong.
I speculated it was at 3, a dead middle, but then when you rotate the scale 90 degrees, you're somewhere out there.
It expands outward to include like non-binary people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
However that gets constructed. There are people who are better at visualization than I am.
I don't know. The Huck's rotating hand scale seemed fine.
But it's not very...
It had a sound effect.
It doesn't have very good design principles. And I don't have a very attractive arm.
No, that's like an illustrator of the big hairy arm principle of design.
Okay.
Link to the big hairy arm principle down below, too. So the way that Queerness Podcast works, we did this in Scotland with TJ, and it worked super well, is Huck is our token straight guy.
Mm-hmm.
And we have 3 topics tonight, and Huck's job is to guess what that is like, or imagine what that is like. And then Kyle and I will fill him in on the realities. And the realities are certainly unique for each of us. In the same way that they were in the last podcast.
And the wonderful benefit is I was running late, so they did the pre-show and they talked it all out.
We have not prepped him at all.
Yeah, I have no idea. I have vague topics.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about it. So really, like, it's going to be gut reactions.
Yeah, he doesn't even know the specifics of these questions.
Yeah.
I resisted the urge to just make one of them politics. But no, the first one is life, since coming out? Like, how do you imagine somebody's life changes or might change after they come out? Because last time we talked about coming out and what that's like and what that means. But, and I think we dug out some of the changes last time, but more specifically, I mean, Kyle and I, for example, both came out years ago.
Almost a decade for me.
Mm-hmm. Me too, I think. But, so there's a lot of distance from that. And those changes still ring forward. So what do you imagine some of those changes are? How people's lives change? It's a hard question. Like the questions get harder.
Especially because I'm not sure where the direction of the conversation went. So I think in Scotland we established that my impression of coming out was a single event.
Mm.
And that we ended up discussing, or you and TJ ended up discussing, it's a multiple, happens over and over.
It's like a rocket ship. It's a multi-stage process.
Yeah. So life since coming out, I imagine there's probably something similar to that, where it's not like you flip a switch and suddenly life changes dramatically. There's, I don't know, maybe a stepping up, or not stepping, the up and down is relative, but like there's a stepping process, you know, you joining different communities, give yourself permission to think differently, I mm-hmm. suppose. And I suspect there's some element of, quote, like seeing who your real friends are, or like your relationships with other people starts to change. And that's what I mean by real friends, that, you know, people don't accept you or are not comfortable around you. And so those kinds of relationships break down or just drift apart.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine there's probably a lot of tokenism. Thinking back to a friend of mine who came out to me, she then became my token gay friend. And I imagine that when you come out in certain friend groups, you become the token gay friend, as if you speak on behalf of the entire community, or that you're a source of expert knowledge. So I'm kind of rambling because I'm not sure where the direction was supposed to end up.
There's some good stuff in there.
So, but that's my first impressions of what is involved after coming out for the first time, I guess, to pick an arbitrary point in time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, how am I wrong? Lay it on me, guys.
Kyle? specifically, to speak to your own experience.
In my experience, life since coming out, I mean, now that it's almost been a decade, I'm much more confident in who I am, and my own, like, my characteristics, my personality, and I am less afraid to be like, oh, you know, this is my boyfriend, whereas, you know, when, you know, maybe the 10th time you come out, you're still apprehensive of being like, oh, you know, do I need to, should I tell this person, what will they react? Now, it's far less than that. Like, I think I'm in danger, for example, then, you know, don't want to come out then.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, I'll just say, you know, oh, you know, this is my, if I'm out with my boyfriend, I'll say, you know, this is my boyfriend. And, if the person, if I'm talking with that person and I thought they were, open-minded and they turn out not to be, then maybe I don't want to be their friend anymore, or I don't want to associate with that person. And it's not a big a deal, because I'm privileged in that I have a really good group of friends and family who support me, and that's, for me, that's, you know, they're the ones who matter most. So if someone is not okay with me, then, and I'm, you know, I'm getting to know them, then maybe I don't need to get to know them, and that, you know, that's okay.
Yeah. So thinking about mine, I am like a queer ninja. Like I guess I was really stealthy. and it wasn't until like about a year ago when I started wearing nail polish. Which, if you are listening, my nail polish is wonderful today. The color is Superstition. But
it looks like the tart is blue to me.
Yes.
I'm colorblind.
Yes, it is a blue.
Other people pick my nail polish for me.
I was just trying to comment on the fact that I'm terrible with discriminating different colors.
The label says superstition.
Sure.
I didn't notice so many changing relationships. I have definitely known people who, you know, they were afraid to come out, like, to their parents or when for being ostracized, or who have been ostracized as a result of that. And happily, that was never an issue. I guess both you and I have led pretty fortunate, like, queer lives.
Yeah, like, I mean, of course, I've experienced some persecution, but really not to the scale that so many other people have experienced.
Smash cut to the tip.
Yeah, like, I, there might be someone who doesn't like it, but again, that person is probably not close to me, and so it really doesn't affect me that much. You know, if they don't like the fact that I'm gay, well, that's nice. It doesn't really affect me, like...
Yeah,
it doesn't hurt my feelings. I've lived a privileged life in that sense, where I haven't had to really experience as much persecution as other people. Especially, my family has an atheist background, so for example, growing up, I didn't have to deal with the religious aspect of coming out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my family is also secular. It's definitely shifted the communities that I belong to. It's shifted events that I go to and things like that. Like, mm-hmm. if I don't think it's going to be a queer positive space, I am not interested in going.
Mm-hmm.
Purely because, in a sense, I don't want to contribute to spaces that aren't queer positive. Like, full stop.
Yeah.
It hasn't drastically affected my work life. And work isn't something that we've talked about yet. But... I have had some choice conversations out and about, especially since I started wearing nail polish. Like, that was the thing that is the thing now that, like, codes me as queer.
Or calling your purse a purse.
Calling my purse a purse is a way to fuck with all kinds of people.
Yeah.
I have a bag that I carry around, and everybody's like, "What's your man purse?" I'm like, "We have a word for a purse carried by a man. It's purse." I've been doing that to fuck with people for a long time. but the nail polish was really, like I get interesting commentary from dudes. You know, like really offhand stuff, like at stores and things like that, where they're like, did your kids paint your nails? And I'm like, no. I recall once just buying into it for a bit, and I was like, "Why? Do you think they did a good job?" And he's like, "Yeah." And I'm like, "Well, they didn't do it. I did it." But I also get a lot of commentary from, also in the same situation, from women. And I wonder how much coding as queer codes you as safer for women to be around. Which is an intriguing sort of question that I don't have a good answer to. I've noticed a big shift in the media that I, like, watch, listen to, etc. Again, I don't have a lot of time for anything that isn't queer positive. If you're an artist and you're a shithead, then, I mean, there's lots of other artists out there for me to follow. But I've also noticed that, like, and I don't know, Kyle, if you've noticed this too, where you follow somebody for a while, like somebody's work, and then, you know, like 6 months down the road or 8 months down the road, they come out, and you're like, huh.
Yeah.
And really, like, did some part of me know, and is that why I feel a connection, or... Is it just like a weird coincidence? And like I'm on like the eighth time of that happening now. But yeah, so there's a bunch of that. Like it's shifted, like how I think about media, how I partake of media. I fight with people a lot more. because discussions about like queerness and queer values and things like that are no longer things that I feel comfortable sitting on the sidelines of. And I am a generally confrontational and argumentative person, as you may have noticed in 75 episodes.
In terms of, I guess, friendships, I think most of my friends are women. And that wasn't, it's just sort of, I guess, a thing that happened, that since coming out, I associate most with women. I guess maybe it's and this wasn't a conscious choice I was making. It was, I guess, maybe just subconsciously I feel more comfortable with women. I don't know why. Because like in high school and such, like all my friends were male, and now all my friends are mostly women.
I'm about 50-50, I think. But I was definitely the other way in high school, which were where most of my friends were women. But yeah, I don't know. I had another thing I was gonna that I had thought about that I totally forgot. So moving on to our next topic. Yeah. I was like half articulated and then it just vanished.
That's okay. The first time you watch it, you're going to remember.
Oh my God. I'll leave a comment if I think of it.
Or save it for the next episode we do on queerness.
Yeah. So the next one is homophobia. And Kyle and I sort of like wandered around on topics like harassment, discrimination, microaggressions, and what we sort of settled on was you know, homophobia as a question is, what do you think, or what do you imagine people's experiences of homophobia are like? I mean, I guess in the sense of instances, but also in the sense of like what that feels like.
So this is an exercise in empathy.
Yeah. What is it?
So because of the circles of friends that I keep, I do know that homophobia and other kinds of terminology that describes discrimination is a little bit more encompassing than I would immediately blush. Like, so homophobia, I think, typically is thought of, at least mainstream, in terms of like active aggression of like violence and whatnot, mm-hmm. as opposed to in the pre-show we were talking about issues of representation or lack of representation, so not having anybody that you can identify with, mm-hmm. or at least you feel kindred to. So I guess there's side of it.
Unless you're Kyle, who's an island.
Unless you're Kyle. So there's that side of it, of feeling isolated or that there's very few people who... there's a lot of people who can empathize with you, I suppose, but not in the way of feeling like... it's kind of hard to tell. Maybe because I'm thinking like the indictment of the fact that we had a hard time coming up with a lot of like politicians, for example, that kind of trailblazer, somebody, it gives you something that somebody's already done it before, cut a path for you. You know, like you can strive towards that kind of thing if you choose. So I'm waffling a little bit. What other bits of homophobia? I mean, there's the legal ones in the States where it seems like your ability to enter in contracts can be taken away willy-nilly depending on an election result.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no there's no stability of lifestyle there, I guess. I'm kind of drawing a blank in terms of homophobia. Again, not really knowing where to go. That's not just people actively trying to visit violence upon you.
Yep.
So, all right. I pass.
Do you want to go first, Kyle?
You can go ahead.
All right. I think why we settled on homophobia is that it encompasses a bunch of, like, everything from active aggression to, like, little tiny stuff.
Oh, if I may interject, there mm-hmm. was one thing in the previous topic that I wanted to ask Kyle when you were talking about mm-hmm. the majority of your friends tend to be female. Do you notice that now that you're out of high school, because like you said, there was a shift from high school into I guess, your adult life, mm-hmm. Do you find that men tend to treat you differently? Which kind of dovetails into the homophobia conversation.
I guess, again, I've had the people that I have, like the men, I should say, that I've associated with, have been quite open-minded, where I even complimented a male friend once, a straight male friend, I should say, and he took it as, you know, like a compliment, like, thank you. There was no sort of homophobic, like, oh God, you said that I'm attractive or whatever it was. He was just like, oh, thank you, you know, and it was just a normal thing. So I'm perhaps a bad case example.
Part of me is like, do you know that many straight men? Every time Bi Visibility Day comes around, I realize I know way less straight people than I thought I did.
Yeah, but I mean, perhaps we live in a bubble. I lived abroad for a year. Right. And so there was a lot of homophobia in that regard, where I lived in an international dorm, and a lot of the students were from post-Soviet countries who are less educated with LGBT issues, of course. So when they found out that I'm gay, some of them were very, like, apprehensive and very much sort of cautious around me. But I was really patient in teaching them that gay people are just as boring as straight people could be.
See our baking episode.
And by the end of the year, they were extremely comfortable with me. I was treated as everyone else was. In fact, at the end of the year, they even thanked me, saying, you know, thank you for being patient with me, and thank you for teaching me about LGBT people. Like one person said that if they're ever asked when they go back to their country, they can say, you know, yes, I met someone who is gay, and he's just a normal, boring person like everybody else is. So
you don't give yourself enough credit. Especially as some sort of yarn-related food wizard. But, yeah, my experiences with it... I largely travel under the radar.
Hence the ninja.
Yeah, but the experience of that is... Especially when hanging with... And I suppose hanging out with is the wrong context. Typically, I am not... the person who, like, I'm the person that you don't tell those jokes around, because I will bust your ass about it pretty much immediately. But in workplace context, there's more pressure. There's a bunch of, like, professional consequences to being the person who busts people's asses all the time. Even if it's about something as simple as changing the wording of an announcement from both genders to all genders. That announcement was an equity-related announcement, by the way. But we, you know, and to be fair, we did get it changed. But, no, it is the jokes that people will crack. And the... In some sense, I don't want to tread too much on our third topic with this, but it is the things about queer experience that people don't get. So when we went to the Pulse Memorial back in August?
I can't remember.
June. It was before Scotland. There were two hate groups that showed up. Mm. Two that I saw.
Yeah.
And they didn't beat anybody up. They didn't yell anything. They didn't have to. They just let people know that they were there. They showed up to remind people like me that we are not safe in this city when we come to grieve our dead.
Happily, though, like, if you hadn't pointed that out and explained them to me, I wouldn't have even noticed. So I guess there's at least
I'm both paranoid and observant, apparently. But yeah, like, there is, I'm also willing to Google the thing on the back of a guy's sweater. But I mean, that's not some faraway place. That's my hometown. You know, which is a region of 500,000 people. So, and the bit of it that I regard as homophobia is not even the hate groups. I mean, the hate groups are an obvious example. It's the sort of the lack of understanding of the queer experience when you explain to somebody, when you mention to somebody that, like, this is a thing, and they go, well, but they didn't punch anybody. And they're like, well, no. But that doesn't mean they won't. Like, they, you know, violence perceived is violence achieved. You know, it's the bit where people feel free to make jokes that are sort of exploitative of marginalized groups, and I mean, in this context specifically queer people. You know, somebody at work one time commented that they got they'd come back from a colonoscopy, and they're like, I got a Victoria Park special. Victoria Park is a nearby park in Kitchener, and it is especially in you know, decades past, it was like a notorious hangout in the public washrooms for gay sex. Not that shocking, especially when you consider that it was not the kind of thing that was safe to necessarily have even in your own home. And it trades on that idea of, you know, we're making a joke out of exploiting people's safety, or the lovely statement that's been going around since the American election of "We survived Reagan." I'm like, well, ask queer people how many of them survived Reagan. Yeah. A generation of people died of HIV/AIDS. Like, they're just gone. Because Reagan wouldn't say the word and wouldn't acknowledge their existence. You know, it's the stuff like that. It's when, you know, one of our city councilors says, well, the Canadian flag stands for everybody, when it has only really done that since maybe 2005? Maybe? There are still fights going on?
Even this year, because Trudeau passed that one trans bill. I can't remember exactly what it was. Yeah. So, even this year,
you could argue to protect the rights of trans people in certain instances. Like, it is one of those things where it is all the stuff, the stuff that gets to me is the stuff that people don't. It is the bits of the experience that they don't interrogate and don't see the need to. Because it's one thing to just not think about it, but it is another thing to, when someone from that community, submits testimony on it, to then be like, yeah, but whatever, right? Which is a thing that aggravates me a great deal. Speaking of things that aggravate me a great deal.
Well, that's an interesting segue.
Ryan's looking at our third topic, which is straight people.
Okay.
So, yeah, how do you imagine... I mean, I maybe foreshadowed it slightly.
How do I imagine being straight is?
Oh. No. I mean, that's the thing is, and I'm trying to remember the way we wanted to phrase this. But in part, I think, how do you imagine that being queer affects your relationships with straight people? I mean, and maybe part of that is tied into the notion of. Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, one thing we talked about earlier is, there were two women, I remember specifically, who knew that I was gay right away. And their reasoning for that was because I could look them straight in the eyes and, you know, there was no sexual need or anything like that because I'm gay. Like, I could look a woman straight in the eyes, and, like, there was no desire there or anything like that. I was just having a conversation. I could look at them in the eyes, and, yeah.
It's in a sense that, like, the asking the question of what does it mean to be straight or what is it like being straight is a non-question. It isn't a meaningful question. Mm-hmm. But in the sense of how do you think being queer, I mean, changes or affects the relationships you have with straight people, in the ways in which you regard them? Like I said, I may have foreshadowed at least my part slightly.
Okay, so wait, the question is how does either being or coming out as queer change your relationship? Mm-hmm.
Change your relationship with straight specifically people, how do you change straight people also, you know, in their relationship with you? You could look at it the other way too.
Yeah, similar to my question of do dudes treat you any differently, like in the context of you said most of your friends are female versus again, I'm trying to think of my gut intuitions as opposed to what I think the answers might be. So,
like, that's why I'm always like, imagine what this is like rather than tell me actual positions that you hold.
Yeah.
Like, let's be sufficiently charitable to the fact that we're putting you on the spot.
Yeah. Okay. So I imagine that there's a lot of, how do you phrase this? Forced education involved, where straight people expect you to educate them on the gay lived experience. There's the expectation of you speaking on behalf of a community, mm-hmm. which in this case, you would also, you're somehow an expert in LGBTQ matters, even though you're only perhaps one letter of that. There might be a perception that you are friendlier and more approachable than maybe you perhaps feel. That people, I don't know, because you're gay, somehow you're super friendly, super welcoming, super glad to be talking.
People can ask you really personal questions that you really didn't want to know about them.
Yeah, and I guess
I've never had anybody do that, but I've heard your stories.
Yes, yes.
Go ahead.
And I mean, going further down, so this is outside of the experience of this room, I suppose, but like I know for friends who are trans, the idea of there's a lot more prying into your personal life than is warranted. I think just for the sake of the time of the podcast, I'll perhaps stop speculating there.
Okay.
And allow you to speak.
There are people who have asked me to educate them on trans issues, and I've had to tell them, you know, I'm cisgendered, so I cannot tell you what it's like to be trans. I can't, because I am not. I can, you know, perhaps give them a fringe answer, but again, it, you know, as someone who is cisgendered, I can't. Perhaps I could, you know, steer them in a direction, but yeah. As for changing people's perspectives, as I said before, being abroad, was a good experience, on both sides. It was interesting for me to be in an international atmosphere and sort of come out there, because it's coming out in your sort of your bubble where you live is mm-hmm. different than when you're abroad in an international atmosphere with people from all of the world, mm-hmm. And when you're a queer person, and so at least my approach in that circumstance was to be really patient, and you know, even though I did experience some discrimination, a lot of the time it was because those people that I was with hadn't been educated. So, you know, a lot of the time it was unintentionally, they were unintentionally being discriminatory. So I had to explain, and I did it sort of in a calm way. where 6 months later, people were really comfortable with me, and they even started to ask me some questions, some a little too personal. but, you know, I tried to be as open as I could and educate people. And as I said earlier, some went back home with a sort of new perspective on LGBTQ issues.
I am like reverse Kyle. No, I don't know. I get asked a lot less personal questions. Like I said, I know you've got some specific stories that are intimate.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have had the educate me conversation. I have had the I'm an ally who declares my safety while completely being unsafe conversation. I'm a straight person with opinions on gay people or queer people, and the actual lived experience of those people doesn't matter conversation. I don't want to use the term frustrated, but frustrated. Impatient, perhaps. I think most of it is that straight is normal. Like, that's why straight people don't ask these questions. Mm-hmm. Straight people, like, they regard themselves as normal.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why when we were trying to come up with an icebreaker, we immediately dismissed the, like, when did you know that you were straight versus, like, when did you know you were gay
question. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it isn't a meaningful question, because it's never something you've had to think about.
Yeah, like, I didn't choose to be straight or gay. It's just...
Like, if there's one thing that changed about my relationship with straight people, it is that... No, like, part of it is that the recognition of that, I'm going to call it intellectual laziness, because questions have never had to be asked, there's an expectation that people who have asked these questions will educate. And when these are questions that could be asked and reflected on meaningfully, you know, but and it carries with it the notion that as a quote unquote normal person, these aren't meaningful questions to ask. Like you have to specifically ask deviants for this. And some of that is like to be more charitable than I'm being. Some of it is true. Like you know, the lived experience of straight discrimination is a non-thing. You know, there is no institutional systemic discrimination against straight people. Straight people never had to fight for the right to get married. Mm-hmm. But you know, there is also what comes with that normalcy and that privilege is the ability to privilege testimony over others. To ignore things that don't seem like a problem. Like, I recall after the election, and still a little bit, but I'm much sort of chilled about it now. But getting into conversations about it is important to recognize that the percentage of American people who voted to... you know, throw trans people essentially under the bus politically should not be given a pass on that. It is cute to call for unity, but it is impossible to unify with a bunch of people who clearly don't care about you and who have made no effort to care about you because they do not feel that is effort worth making. And you know, there are definitely conversations where, like, I will agree that I you know, in my hotter moments that straight people, and it is always straight people, who advocate for that pass, for that like long-term higher, you know, higher unity thinking. I regard them as complicit in that. And that is complicity that I will not abide. Like, I fight with people a lot about things. Arguably, I created a pod. We created a podcast where all I do is argue with a straight guy for an hour. Sometimes we agree.
It's a thing.
But, yeah. Welcome to Constant Crucible Podcast, Beat Up on Straight People Edition.
I'm the punching bag.
Yeah, a little bit. Like, I mean, we, and you and I have had this conversation where, like, I, like, over the almost 4 years we've been doing this, over the 6 or 7 years that we've known each other, like, your position has shifted dramatically, not just in the sense of like, a position, your position on rights, which I would imagine has been actually been pretty steady, but on stuff like privilege, education, you know, your first reaction is usually not to ask somebody, but to Google it.
I find it best usually wait till somebody else asks the dumb question so they can take the heat for it, and then I'll just learn from their mistake. But generally, I find just keeping my mouth shut and just trying to pay attention to what other people say is a better strategy than to demand people answer my questions for me.
And to be fair, coming out and noticing this about my relationship with straight people has, in its own way, affected my relationships with other marginalized communities, people of color, indigenous people. Like, I have definitely been that guy in other threads. And that is a thing that in like, I don't know, the past 3 or 4 years that I have certainly backed off of, where I'm like, you know what? I don't have a useful comment for this. I'm going to go and do some reading, and I'll be back, maybe. But thanks for getting me to think about this as an avenue.
Yeah, that is one thing that I'm grateful for being gay for, is to have learned empathy, in a sense.
That's in, like, there's a sense in which that sentence is weird, but I
understand. No, you know what I mean. Where you
I understand what you mean.
You, because, you know, being gay, you're persecuted in a way that straight people are not. You learn how to value being a minority.
I feel like persecuted is the wrong word.
Yeah, it is the wrong word.
What you mean?
Discriminated.
Yeah, discriminated.
Discriminated against is, yeah, sorry. Like, my brain is not functioning right
now.
We're
not burning people to stake yet.
Yeah. but yeah, you know what I mean, where you can understand other people's struggles a little more. Not exactly what they're going through, but you can begin to understand. Is what I mean.
Yeah, our conclusions. Queerness is really complicated. But it's worth reading about, it's worth interrogating, it's worth talking about, even if you're a straight person. It turns out that being cool doesn't matter, or doesn't care about your sexuality. But it does care about other people's. And it is mindful of it. Oh, man. I'm Jim.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Kyle.
Stay awesome.
Stay awesome.
Finally, the homosexual agenda is complete. Now we can all take naps and have brunch.